Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Take a look at the declining banking sector. There's an interesting chart I chanced upon recently. You know, the largest short bets in financial stocks globally. And in recent weeks, short sellers have been taking aim at a bank, not in Switzerland, not in Silicon Valley, but in the relatively tame financial center of Canada. So Toronto Dominion Bank topping the list of the biggest bearish bets, the largest short bets in financial stocks across the globe. BNP Paribas came in at number two, Bank of America at number three. So we're going to find out a little bit about, you know, what short sellers know about these banks and what they think the latest worries are about and how they could impact Toronto Dominion Bank, for example, the lender at the top of the biggest bearish bet list, which we're going to take a closer look at today. We're also going to be looking at bonds. And if you're interested in ChatGPT, I don't know if you've downloaded those plugins. I know I have. So now every time I search for something, I get an associated search on ChatGPT at the same time, which just means a lot more to read if I think about it. But if you wanted to ride on the ChatGPT trend, and if you wanted to, you know, do it the way the guys who invested in the picks and shovels did during the gold rush, what are your options, really? We'll put all these questions to one of our favorite investors. Arun Pai is on the investments team at Monk's Hill Ventures. Good morning, Arun.
Good morning, Michelle.
All right, help us understand how we should be thinking through bonds. We know, you know, in the early 80s, when the Fed conquered inflation, and that was economically painful interest rate hikes, but that in turn planted the seeds for a 40-year bull market in fixed income securities, which all ended, we know, around March 2022. Given the latest market narrative, where we are in markets right now, it's a different mix, of course, when we talk about geopolitical and economic gloom compared to the dawn of the 80s. But when we think about bond purchases with interest rates still high, what is the best way forward for retail investors to think through their bond purchases?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question and something that's a lot more relevant, or it should be a lot more relevant right now, I feel, to take up a certain sizable portion of any investor's portfolio. I've been lucky to be on your show for the past, I think, 5 years, give or take right now. And you would have heard me rant about how I just don't see why people would invest money into fixed income, given interest rates are basically zero since 2008. QE has been happening a lot. And so sure, from a very short-term nature of punting around, maybe people want to get into bonds, but inflation has to give at some point, right? And I think what happened in the start of 2022, when the Fed realized that this whole inflation trend is not transient, but potentially a lot more permanent, they kudos to them to right-size the ship, and they went about increasing interest rates at the fastest clip that the financial markets have ever seen, which has led to other issues and stuff, and I'm sure we'll get to that later in your show. But I think that's led to a very interesting opportunity for investors to take advantage of. So if you kind of look at the yield curve right now, right, basically the interest rate curve, the front end of the curve, anyway up to like about 1 to 2 years, is quite high. It's like over 4 or 5% on the back of the Fed interest rates, the Fed funds rates being, you know, over 4.5%. But the back end, like 20, 30 years, given the market is predicting that, you know, an economic recession is going to potentially be coming, or at least a slowdown, which means the Fed will have to start cutting interest rates again later this year or beginning of next year, leads the back end of the curve to be actually lower. So this whole inverted yield curve phenomena. So from that perspective, investors, I feel, can take advantage of this market right now, looking at relatively short-dated front-end bonds, anywhere between like, you know, 6 months to up to about 2 years, from government bonds that are obviously close to zero risk, or as close to zero risk as you can get, to relatively decent high grade credit, getting a return of 6%, 6.5% per annum, I feel is a space that is quite interesting right now. And you know me, right? Like I've been anti-bonds for the longest time.
Oh yeah.
But now I feel that it's quite an interesting moment where a pretty decent chunk of your portfolio can be kept to try to shield yourself from, as you were mentioning, the macroeconomic uncertainties.
So interesting. And thank you for reminding us. Have we been chatting for 5 years, really? Doesn't feel like that.
I think so. I think 2016, 2017 is probably so slightly longer, in fact.
Oh,
I
my
think,
gosh.
6, 7 years.
Thank you for being a friend of the show. It feels fresh every single time, I have to say. Can I ask you this? Can you take us behind the scenes with your work? Everybody seems to be doing their work, and ChatGPT is their invisible helper. Are you using ChatGPT in your work in any way yet?
Maybe in two different ways I can try and answer that question.
Okay. Right?
As a venture capitalist, we look at a lot of early stage startups to invest in. And ever since ChatGPT came out, we are starting to see a lot of startups in this space, in the LLM, in the generative AI space, that's trying to, you know, all the good stuff, right? Increase efficiency, enhance productivity, etc., across the board, from call centers to chatbots to just enhancing the customer experience when they're dealing with a corporate, right? The entire spectrum, search, productivity tools like Slack in terms of like messaging, you name it. So a lot of startups have taken ChatGPT as the base layer, and they're trying to create like their own user experience or user interface on top and going to market on the back of that. So that's one aspect of my job that has been, that is seeing a lot of effects of post the launch of ChatGPT.
Interesting.
On the other hand, in terms of actual day-to-day work, not so much just yet, because our work typically involves a lot of relationship building, getting to know entrepreneurs, believing in their thesis, and then supporting them through the journey of their company building, right? And in that area, at least so far, ChatGPT has not encroached that much on, but in my previous life, in banking days of coming up with a lot more of like, say, either research reports or analysis on a certain topic, that's something that definitely ChatGPT has had a lot more effect on.
Oh, that's right? So interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, the space is really, really interesting. It's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. So you're the second investment expert I've asked the same question to today, because I'm just curious, how could it possibly trade, impact people in this world? What are we seeing on the ground right now? So thanks for sharing. There's a lot of interest in OpenAI and investing in OpenAI, but we know that OpenAI, the company behind ChatGPT, is a privately held company, not currently available for public investment. I suppose if you're a venture capital fund, then you may be able to indirectly invest. No, actually, you may be able to indirectly invest in OpenAI through VC funds or other investment vehicles that do invest in private tech companies with exposure to OpenAI. But for the retail investor, they're thinking, listen, how do I get in on this trend? Do I have to buy Microsoft, which owns a chunk of OpenAI? Is that the only path if I'm a retail investor and I want the pick and shovel approach to investing in ChatGPT specifically?
Yeah, that's a bit of a difficult one, right? And for many good reasons, regulation and the government has come in to ensure that retail investors do not get caught up in a fad of a new technology and go about, spending away their hard-earned life savings. I mean, if you think of venture capital as an investment class, our friends in the U.S. who have gotten the lucky opportunity to invest in companies like OpenAI.
Right.
This is a investment vehicle where capital needs to be basically locked in for a period of like up to 10 to 12 years. Wow. And only post that do you see any returns that come in. So naturally, and that's just because the nature of business building takes that long,
right?
It's not like you can set up a Facebook today and in 6 months you can IPO and then hope to make a lot of money, or there is no liquidity concept like the way there is in the public market space. So you layer that with a very high failure rate, because that's the nature of startups. it lends itself to typically institutional investors investing in, not even like accredited investors to some extent, but even in like decently mid net worth families do not want their capital locked away for 10 years.
Right.
So from a retail investor's perspective, to get direct exposure to any of these like really cutting edge technology startups that have a very high rate of failure, probably for a very good reason, has been disallowed by the government. What investors, though, can do is take a look at the public market space, obviously. Microsoft, like you mentioned, great example, right? I mean, this was the sleeping dinosaur for many years. Mm-hmm. Post the Bill Gates massive run-up, a lot of tech evangelists kind of wrote off Microsoft, right, until Nadella came along and has resurrected this sleeping dinosaur, not just in terms of their own cutting-edge products, but also this huge investment into open AI to ensure that Microsoft stays at that cutting edge. And from that perspective, this is one of the marquee tech stocks that retail investors can obviously directly invest into. But it's not just Microsoft, right? I mean, if you look at what Salesforce, Mark Benioff has been claiming on how ChatGPT is going to revolutionize the world, how they've already integrated ChatGPT into Slack, one of their investments, and just generally their CRM software. You've got Chinese tech companies that are coming up with their own local version of ChatGPT to power the Chinese economy a lot more. There are a whole host of, I mean, Google has Bard. So it's not like, you know, OpenAI is the only company that has cornered this space. Mm-hmm. A lot of the large tech companies have basically infinite resources to deploy in this space. And we're starting to see a lot of green shoots over there too. So I don't think a retail investor should feel like, oh, I'm not able to invest into this asset class at all. Mm-hmm. To the contrary, I would say given this market correction in the tech space, it's a pretty interesting area to actually deploy capital into publicly traded tech companies.
Interesting. And you can also always research companies that are in the AI sector, right? Companies that are AI-powered, for example. I mean, Amazon is one company, the amazing AI technology that's powering it. If you're interested in jumping in on AI as a force, you know, that'll shape the world.
Absolutely. So you have, I would put this into two camps, right? Mm. You have the likes of Amazon, Google, Facebook that actually adopt real AI to provide their services to you. And on the other hand, you have more like slightly smaller companies, but that are specifically AI focused in the data analytics space, like, say, Palantir or someone else that are publicly traded that have gone through a big price correction already. So, in fact, I would say quite a few of the private market investors, especially later stage venture capital funds, are now underwater because when they got into the private market space, it was at much higher valuations. So a retail investor can actually get in right now into some of these public markets at public market businesses at a more attractive valuation than even private investors. So there are quite a few avenues for retail investors to deploy capital via the public markets in this space.
Oh, that's a great one. All right, I'm going to segue to the banking crisis and the aftermath of that. So let's break it down. I watched Ray Dalio recently talk about the banking crisis, and he said it's about leverage and it's about debt at the heart of it. So I want to ask you, traders are divided over whether the spiraling banking crisis is really over. So let me ask you, is it over in your opinion?
And Ray Dalio came out, you know, Jamie Dimon also was coming out saying the long-term repercussions of this is going to be felt for many years across the economy. My take, so I've actually been quite bullish, not in the financial sector overall, but certain names within the financial sector. I mean, having been part of Lehman Brothers myself, which is still sadly the world's biggest bankruptcy, I mean, Credit Suisse came close, but alas, you know, it had to get bought out. So I still have, still wearing that cap, sadly, of the world's largest bankruptcy. The lesson learned is, I think the financial sector, given the fact that it's so regulated, it provides a very, very large competitive moat to businesses that know what they're doing which basically means that are able to manage their risk very well. So I'm going to stick my neck out over here. Mm. And my take on this is the best run financial institutions, and I'm a big believer in DBS as well as JP Morgan, I think they will actually come out a lot stronger from this saga, precisely because a lot of people are going to lose faith in your fly-by-night, smaller regional banks that probably should not have grown to that scale and that size to begin with. I mean, it's okay, that being said, it's easy to look in retrospect, you know, Signature Bank, Silicon Valley Bank, such a concentrated nature of customers, depositors, inability to be able to lend out that money to other industries because you do not have any core competence. So there was high concentration risk. Again, easy to say, you know, hindsight is 2020, obviously. Mm-hmm. But from the perspective, taking a step back and looking at the sector overall, I think this is a place where capital can be deployed efficiently by investors. It'll just should gravitate to the best of the best performing ones, and there's going to be a huge tailwind for those. So from that perspective, personally, I feel this whole banking crisis mm-hmm. is going to lead to even more concentration, and even more concentration typically is even higher like a more monopolistic way of doing business, and that eventually is going to lead to better shareholder return.
Thank you for that. Let me try to get a little deeper on the topic and introduce Jim Cramer's ideas. So he has three camps of responses over the spiraling banking crisis and the aftermath. He believes that either earnings will collapse for all companies, earnings will fall apart for everyone, but the defensive, or that large cap tech stocks are really the area that will be benefiting from the flight to safety. So do you see any of those camps as a camp where you'd be happy to take your hat off to, or, you know, plant your feet in?
I would go as far as saying big tech. Let's go to point number three to begin with.
Okay.
Big tech has had a substantial correction,
mm-hmm.
but I really do believe we are still in the early innings of the value add the sector as a whole can provide to society. So from that perspective, I'm actually quite bullish in that area. Given that the valuations have corrected to this much of an extent, personally, I'm quite a big fan. Not just U.S. tech, but I do feel that China tech, I can sense that some kind of the relationship with the government is thawing.
Yeah.
We saw what happened to Alibaba and the split up. It seems like the wheels are starting to be greased a little bit more, and the wheels are in motion within China tech. And I can hope that there won't be that much more government influence, and we'll be able to see a more attractive price appreciation in those stocks. So from that perspective, regardless of what happens in the macroeconomic the world that we're living in,
mm-hmm.
I do feel that big tech does have a role to play as a decent percentage of an investor's portfolio.
Interesting.
That's on the one hand.
Okay. Okay.
Please.
Yeah. What's the other hand?
So
show us the other hand.
On the other hand, I do feel that this big correction that we've gone through is, or that we are still in the process of going through, has not seen its end just yet. I think big tech had gone through a huge price run up, but then it went through a corresponding much bigger price correction than others. The defensives, in my mind, it's more oil and gas. So I don't know how you want to call that defensives or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think oil and gas, and that's something that I've talked about on your show in the past also. I think a lot of capital was taken out because of this whole ESG aspect of investing. And I feel while I do appreciate and believe the need for ESG investing,
mm-hmm.
at the same time, the world still runs on oil, natural gas, and we as investors, from a pure financial point of view, mm-hmm. need to look at this space also as a potential way to earn returns. So from that perspective, that's another sector that I believe could be quite attractive for investors also.
Interesting. Just very quickly, maybe just your top line thoughts on the surprise OPEC plus cuts, and you know, do you what well, I won't ask you what you think was behind the decision, but how do you think that's going to possibly impact oil? Some believe that oil's biggest rally of the year is appearing to be stalling. Others are still quite bullish. So do you think we could see oil trading north of $100 again?
Impossible to say, to be honest, but I do feel as an investment class, that space is quite interesting. And I think the OPEC cut has provided a decent tailwind to the entire industry for the remainder of this year.
Interesting. All right, let's look. You know, any which way the market goes, somebody is making money. Toronto Dominion has become the biggest bank short, $3.7 billion on the line. Help us unravel this big short, Arun. Why is Toronto Dominion Bank being targeted?
It's a bit of a disaster case, to be honest. There are three main reasons, right? First and foremost is they're in no particular priority order. Firstly, their minority investment in Charles Schwab. They own roughly, I think, about 10%. This is a online brokerage that's listed in the U.S., one of the big boys, you know, Interactive Brokers, E-Trade, Charles Schwab. It's up there, and they had a huge share price correction in the past, like about a month, post this SVB issue of having to write down their bonds. Charles Schwab was announcing that there's a huge amount of unrealized losses in their balance sheet because they're undergoing that same problem of having invested into probably way too many U.S. treasuries when the interest rates were increasing. So Charles Schwab, naturally, the share price took a huge hit last couple of months. TD, being a minority investor, owning 10% of Charles Schwab, naturally had a correction, or potentially is having a correction right now on the back of that too.
Mm.
Point number two, these guys in the heyday of the markets went out and put in a bid to buy a Tennessee-based First Horizon Bank for an amount of close to about, I think, $12 to $15 billion.
Mm.
That share price, First Horizon, is now trading 30% lower than what was the price agreed on. So the markets are obviously looking at this and saying, you know, TD, obviously you overpaid for this. Just pay the exit fee and walk out of this. We want that clarity. Now is not the time to be buying small regional banks who have questionable balance sheets. So that was obviously a big timing issue that led to the price correction and still some uncertainty in the stock. Last but not the least, it's Canadian Housing.
Mm.
Now, what's interesting is, you know, people like us sitting in Singapore, I think we are living in a very, very different world from typical investors investing into real estate in their home markets. Singapore obviously has a huge benefit of being the safe haven of the world, attracting the best talent, and naturally very, very rich people from Indonesia, China, globally, right? So we've seen housing prices going through the roof over here. You open up Straits Times every day, it's like rentals have gone through the roof, prices are going through the roof. HDB landed, non-landed, condo, you name it, right? It makes no difference. The price percolation has gone down all the way up to, down to HDBs. What's different is in parts like in Canada, New Zealand, Australia, on the back of this massive increase of interest rates, we're starting to see consumers looking at this and not being able to actually afford their mortgage payments. Canada especially, unlike the U.S., has got a lot of floating rate mortgages, which as a, in, not as an investor, as a person who is living in a house, as a mortgage holder, or potentially as an investor too, I should say, if there's leverage in the system, which there is to some extent, on the back of zero interest rates, there's a big problem when you just can't make your mortgage payments. And unlike Singapore, where there's such a huge influx of people to compensate for that, there isn't that case in those countries. So you're actually seeing pricing, housing prices go down in a lot of different parts of the world on the back of high interest rates. And that's causing a lot of issues in the quality of the balance sheet of TD especially. And I think it's those three broad reasons that's leading to short sellers identifying that and trying to short it.
And that's why Toronto Dominion has become the biggest bank short, $3.7 billion on the line. Thank you for making it all so clear for us, Arun. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Michelle. Thank you. Thanks as always for having me.
Have a great weekend ahead. Arun Pai from the investments team at Monk's Hill Ventures. This is Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.